Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jim Smythe, and welcome to Massage Therapy Radio. I'm your host, and this week's topic is From Rubs to Riches, Gaining Financial Stability, Solvency, and Security. Tonight's seminar is part of a series of 12 weeks to a better massage business produced by MT Coach founder Don Dillon. Don is an RMT and is author of Better Business Agreements and Charting Skills for Massage Therapists. He's presented in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario, and New Brunswick. Over 50 of his articles have been published in the industry publications, including Massage Therapy Canada, Massage Therapy Today, the AMTA Journal, the AMTWP Connections, and various massage school and professional associations newsletters. Welcome to the show, Don.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Is there anything you'd like to add to that introduction?
No, that's quite complete.
That was good. Well, tonight's show is From Rubs to Riches, and I must admit, Don, that getting to riches in the massage therapy industry is very difficult. So, why did you feel it was important to talk about the topic of financial freedom in this 12 weeks to a better massage business program?
Well, that's a very good question, Jim. I've been writing specifically on business-related topics for massage therapists since the early part of this century, this millennium. And I receive over the years a number of therapists ask a lot of different questions about agreements, about attracting and retaining business. But something that a lot of therapists have confided is the challenges of making ends meet. And these are hard working dedicated, talented individuals, and despite providing good care, despite putting themselves out there, are still having trouble making enough money. I think what's really important is that RMTs need to know that they need to know how to earn enough money, and they also need to feel okay with making money. I think that, as we'll talk about later in our program, it's actually beneficial to society when massage therapists learn how to be affluent and how to bring money into their life. This is a very personal topic for me. I had been challenged for years with trying to earn a sufficient income. My first practice, I had moved to a new city, didn't have any friends or family there, no network of sorts, had a small family to raise. So when my bank accounts were overdrawn, I thought the answer was simply to go out and work harder, try to see more patients, try to tweak something, try to do something different to bring in more patients. But When I didn't have enough money, of course, I'd go into debt. I thought something was wrong with me personally because I just couldn't seem to make ends meet. Despite having a strong practice, people coming back, high retention rates, emerging business skills. And, you know, Jim, I eventually discovered there's a secret to making enough money as a massage therapist.
Well, obviously I have to ask the question, what is this secret?
Well, the secret is that up to this point, massage therapists really didn't have any way of assessing the risks and rewards of opening a massage therapy business. However, there's been a number of studies that have come out with comprehensive information about RMT income levels that are now available. The College of Massage Therapists of Ontario had commissioned a survey where they had found that 43% of massage therapists were not earning what they expected. In fact, their expectations were about $20,000 more than what they actually earned. This is not a problem just for new therapists. In fact, a third of seasoned massage therapists, 7-plus years in practice, were not happy with their income. Over 55% were working from more than one location, and half of all massage therapists, according to the survey, earned less than $30,000 a year. This is not just a Canadian problem. There was a survey in 2007 by the Associated Bodywork and Massage Professionals. They found that the average income from providing massage therapy resulted to just under $18,000, and the average first-year income was about $10,000. Part of the problem, too, is this job is very physical. There's a physical nature to it, and because of that, it's very time and labor-intensive. We're limited in our capacity and our longevity. A study by the Atlantic College of Therapeutic Massage of massage therapists across Canada found that in reporting musculoskeletal pain, 60% of them reported low back pain and greater than 80% reported pain in their wrist and their thumb. Now, it's not just the issues for the massage therapist trying to generate enough income. Of course, there's some external issues that also affect massage therapists. Massage therapists are compensated by out-of-pocket dollars or supplemented by extended health care plans, so we're completely subject to changes and impacts on that on that industry. Now compare that to full and complete coverage under mainstream medical. We often lack public and insurance industry and government understanding of the kind of work we do, and so funding then becomes an issue. It becomes very difficult to get funding. Professional associations, many are resource-strapped. They don't have enough members, and therefore that limits their ability to advocate on behalf of massage therapists to do public relations events. Of course, we're behind in research and in evidence-based practices and degree-level programs compared to other professions, so there's some peer pressure to keep up with nursing and occupational therapy and speech-language pathology, etc. Again, the work is very time- and labor-intensive, which makes it expensive to a lot of middle- and low-income families. And in general, in my various speaking engagements and other things, I found that massage therapists in general tend to lack a business education. I think that the model that we learned in school, being very time and labor intensive, the classic one-hour massage, of course it limits our capacity. We really are limited to the number of people that we can treat in a day. So we need some different models. The secret is that we need some different models in order to earn a sufficient living full-time and for us to be able to charge sufficient fees to sustain us.
I think a lot of therapists would agree with that. So do you have a description of some of these models that might be a fit?
Yeah. Now, a lot of the model that we learn in school is actually a very good model for the spa or the relaxation environment. It focuses on that general relaxation. The person wants to have a lot of time on the table, very different from, say, the chiropractic model. And in Niagara, where I live, the spas tend to charge about $115 an hour treatment, which allows the therapist to have a fairly good take-home pay. However, what's happened is a bit of a hybrid situation in our massage culture, where some therapists that are more clinically oriented, they treat on the hour, but their fees tend to be much lower than the spa because they're working with a different population. And in fact, I find in my area, in Ontario, the recommended fee schedule for an hour treatment by the Ontario Massage Therapists Association is $85, including GST, and I have found that most therapists are probably $15 to $20 an hour below that cost. And again, the repetitive nature of the kind of work that we do, it doesn't hit us right away. It usually catches us years later, which then massage therapists find a diminishing capacity to treat with the cumulative effects of repetitive strain and hard work. So I just want to say to our listeners out there, look, you're trading your vitality for wages. So make sure that your wages are sufficient to cover the cost of the vitality that you're spending. Now, not everybody's having this problem. I wrote about a massage therapist in the magazine Massage Therapy Canada. This was the autumn 2004 issue, if anybody wants to pick it up. This is an individual who was told in school that his income would be limited as a massage therapist to maybe $40,000 to $50,000, and even less being male. They told him that being male, it was going to be more difficult to make a living as a massage therapist. So thankfully, he decided not to buy that agreement. His background was that he was a professional cyclist before becoming a massage therapist, so he already had a network of colleagues who could be prospective patients, and he understood their specific sports needs. He studied a very specific sports-focused type of technique called active release technique, and he opened a clinic based on a model that was a 15-minute model, and he charged $50 for the 15-minute model. Now, some people out there may say, 15 minutes? Now, how are you going to get any results? Well, he did get results. His patients were very happy, and he, as we described in the article, he earns $150,000 a year. Now, that's very atypical for a massage therapist to earn that much, but it's because he wouldn't settle for the old model that they were teaching in school. He created a new model that fit his the way that he wanted to do business. Now, another model, and this is a model that massage therapists can also shy away from, is the rehab model. These treatments are shorter. They use modalities such as TENS, ultrasound, low-intensity laser, far infrared saunas or applications, acupuncture, in combination with massage or manual therapy. Now, this suits the fee schedules of auto insurance and workers' compensation. Their fee schedules are set up typically to pay only for about a half-hour treatment. Now, many massage therapists avoid these two very abundant sources of funding simply because they can't make their hour-long model fit in the insurance plan. Another model is one that a lot of therapists are already incorporating. They become business owners. They employ massage therapists or other service providers. They sell products. So they're making passive income. They're making beyond just their hands-on income. They're creating an opportunity for other therapists and other practitioners to work with them. The goal is to provide essential services to those practitioners and to their clients or patients in exchange for a salary or return on their investment as a manager. And as you can imagine, it's much less strain on the body. There are other options as well. Because of the physical nature of massage, a lot of therapists tend to elect to do it part-time. So they can also work part-time as an instructor in a massage school. They could become a regulator if they have a regulating body in their state or their province. They could do administrative or office work for massage therapists. The 2007 Associated Bodywork and Massage Professional Survey I mentioned said that the therapist was providing an average of 14 contact hours a week, and they were supplementing that with 25 hours a week of another type of work, working in an office, providing massage instruction, working as another healthcare provider, for example, as a nurse, or in a sales and retailer or skin care.
Well, I can certainly relate to your initial comment about the $85 an hour, because at our clinic we just raised our rates to 70, which is $15 behind that number, and that number also includes GST for us.
Yeah.
So different models could be very useful for a number of people, including myself. So if these models do work, then why aren't more RMTs incorporating them?
Well, you know, Jim, I have to say that I'm a very slow learner, and I've only recently figured this out after almost 17 years in practice. But what I realized is that it really wasn't about me. I was working hard. I was doing the right things. It wasn't about me. It was the model that I was using. I didn't know that other models exist until I started to look at some very successful massage therapists and also at some practitioners that were working outside of massage in other different professions or even different industries altogether, how they were doing things. My model used to be work hard, get a good education, and you'll get ahead, which was certainly a useful model during the industrial age, but that model doesn't work anymore, especially in massage therapy, which is very time and labor intensive. We've got to do things in a different way. So I've been spending a lot of time studying and learning more about this. I'd like our listeners to think about an idea where if the business that they're currently working in or that they've created, if someday they were going to sell it or turn it into a franchise model, for example, like McDonald's, where the systems were replicated, now how would they do that? How would they take their business and turn it into a model that could be replicated? The problem with a lot of massage therapists, and of course we know that the retirement age for baby boomers is coming up, which includes a lot of massage therapists, 22 to 25% of massage therapists will be of retirement age. Once that RMT stops practicing, it's hard to sell the business because they are the business. So that years of sweat labor without an exit strategy leads to a business with no value, so they simply close shop and those patients or clients go elsewhere.
So that really doesn't tell us how to get further ahead. So tell us about your rubs to riches model.
Okay. And I apologize to our listeners. I chose those words carefully, rubs to riches. At first, I know as practitioners, massage practitioners, we hear the word rubs and we go, ooh, what, you know, rubs, and we find it a little offensive. But I chose it for a reason, because what I see happening in our industry with a lot of large spas or membership-based businesses or chiropractors who are bringing massage therapists in. Massage therapists are really skilled labor. Because we have very little leverage with funding models, we provide a very good quality of care, but we're still relatively limited. So I want to let our listeners know, I want you to get in the mind frame of going from a skilled person who's providing skilled labor into a person who's now creating your own financial freedom. Now, I've studied a number of financial gurus over the year to try and understand money better, and a lot of them recommend some similar steps. Financial health, I'm going to present a model tonight. It's a three-step process, and of course, like any three steps, it's sequential. There's no skipping. You can't jump to step three without doing steps one and two first. There's no quick fixes. You really need to apply the process in step. The three steps are financial stability, solvency, and security. So I'll describe those in sequence. First of all, financial stability. What does that mean? Well, that means that your income is greater than your expenses. It's a necessary first step. You can't build wealth if you're living beyond your means, if you're spending more than you bring in. That's what we call negative cash flow. And I'll just give our listeners a little bit of a phrase to remember. If your cash flow is choked, then your business goes broke. You really have to have that positive cash flow. In addition to having positive cash flow, you also need to set aside a $1,000 contingency fund. Now, that fund is for emergencies only. So if your income is not greater than your expenses, you have some kind of unexpected thing, your car breaks down and you have to replace a part, or you're ill for 3 days and you lose some income, that fund is to buffer you against unexpected expenses so you're not so vulnerable. In most cases, if you don't have a contingency fund, well, then you have to go right into debt. You have to borrow from somewhere to make up that expense. But if you have a contingency fund, it helps to protect you. It's like a little insurance policy against the very crippling habit of going into debt. So financial stability means that if you need $4,000 a month to cover your business expenses, all the expenses you use to provide your service, and your personal expenses, that's your home, mortgage, food, family expenses, etc. If you need $4,000 a month, then you have to earn at least $4,000 a month to cover. If you're not covering your expenses, then you need to increase your income in some way, reduce your expenses, or more likely both. Now, there are a number of ways to increase income. I've talked about a few models already that can create an opportunity for you to actually raise your income as a massage therapist. And there are also many ways to reduce expenses. Some are pretty tough, but some are simple and relatively painless. I'll tell you a story about a patient of mine who had found it. This was many years ago. I'm sure he would have spent much more by now, but many years ago he noticed he was spending about $400 a year on coffee when he was going at some of the coffee shops. And so what he did was he started to buy his coffee in a tin, got himself a thermos, and took his own coffee to work. And he figured he saved a few $100 just from doing that one thing alone. Now, in Better Business Agreements, I outline how to get clear on your financial position. So anybody out there who's got a copy of the book, I go into this in more detail. So you can look at how to get yourself to a financially stable position. And Jim, I just want to give a quote from Confucius. Maybe some of our listeners have heard. He's some inherent wisdom in Confucius. And a lot of us talk about we want to be successful, but what Confucius says is the man of virtue, and of course we're talking about men and women, but the man of virtue makes the difficulty to be overcome his first business, and success only a subsequent consideration. The man of virtue makes the difficulty to be overcome his first business, and success only a subsequent consideration. So I want our listeners to think about the first step is to get financially stable. Now our second step is solvency. Now, solvency means freedom from all unsecured debt. And what I mean by unsecured debt is debt that is not secured by an asset. So your house, for example, is secured. If you were not able to pay for your house, the bank would come and take it, and you could walk away, basically. But unsecured debt is debt that there is no security. So they will come after you as long as you owe them. Those are credit cards, lines of credit, student loans. Now, you've done the groundwork maintaining positive cash flow, income over expenses, not taking on further debt. Debt is very crippling. There's a very high cost to debt. I'm going to speak, we have listeners from all across North America, but I'm going to speak specifically Canadians here for a minute. Canadians seem to be digging that hole deeper. Canadian household debt to income ratio in 2003 was 105.2%. That's household credit as a percentage of disposable income. 20 years earlier, 1983, it was only 55%, so it almost doubled. The percentage increase in Canadian credit card debt between 1997 and 2001 rose 90%. Over 5 years, rose 90%. So as a whole, we're spending more over and above than what we're making. Debt is really the new slavery. It's commonly loaded onto the middle and lower classes, although people with high income can also carry a lot of debt. And it's like shackles around our ankle. When we have debt, when we're debt-free, we have more choices. We're not living day-to-day avoiding creditors. And if we become ill or disabled for a period, we can survive because we've built up some savings that we don't have all that debt to service. Debt in whatever form diminishes your cash flow. It's like borrowing today against tomorrow. Now let's talk about security. That's our third step. Security is the freedom from worry about having enough money or taking care of ourselves. It gives us choices. Having enough money gives us choices. We can spend our time the way we would like. I want to ask our listeners tonight just to consider a question. What would you do if you had enough income to meet all your expenses, enough savings to counter any emergencies, and the freedom such a position would offer you? Now, practically, what does security mean? Well, it means building on the previous steps, which, again, the stability is having income consistently greater than expenses, having $1,000 set aside for emergencies, solvency, paying off all that unsecured debt, so the only debt that you may have is a mortgage on your home or maybe if you bought your business building. And now security means continuing to build that equity in your business or in your home. You'll take the contingency fund, which was initially $1,000, and once you've paid off all your debt, you'll now use that extra money to start building up your savings, your contingency fund, until you have at least 6 months to live off. So that means if you had to stop working tomorrow then and you had built up your contingency fund, then that means you could live for 6 months and make some decisions because you would have the money to cover your expenses. It wouldn't be a dire situation. In fact, if you think about it, you could even probably get by without disability insurance or even reduce your life insurance because you wouldn't have all that debt you had to cover. You would have that cushion. Security also means generating your income from more than one source of income. So right now, if your income comes from just one source, you have a number of different sources. And I won't speak about that too much because Scott Dartnell is going to be presenting that concept about how to generate other sources of income in about 3 weeks. So we'll wait for Scott's show for that. So your assets, your business, your real estate, your investments, they're all generating income from you. You're not reliant solely on your job to provide income. And Jim, this is a really important point, and I want to express this to our listeners because I suspect, or what I hear from massage therapists, and I suspect this is true for many healing professions, people that are in professions that help others, is that we have a tough time with money. We need money to live in a North American society, but we feel that if we're caring for someone, we're nurturing them, that we shouldn't be accepting money for that. But I want to speak to our listeners about the altruistic side of them, that part of them that doesn't want to work for money, that wants to help worthwhile causes and to give money away. Think about what financial security would do for you. In the news, we've read about Bill Gates giving away $6 billion for helping undeveloped countries with disease. We've heard of Oprah Winfrey, Jackie Chan, Warren Buffett. A great story that I like to tell is Rick Warren, who wrote Purpose-Driven Life. And I can't believe this, but he lives on 10% of his income, and he gives away 90%.
So I've heard that before, Don.
Yeah. So for all of us who think that, you know, we don't do this for money, we don't need much, well, there's so much more you could do if you were generating money. And, I mean, this is much more important even than that, because if we work hard all our lives and we get to the end of our lives, we don't have enough money put away, then our family has to take care of us. The government has to take care of us. But if we achieve financial security, we can take care of ourselves and we can help others.
Are there any more points in your solvency, in your security portion, that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I would just like to say to people that when they get to this point, and, you know, it can take, I want to, you know, reiterate, this is not something you can do overnight. It takes many years. It's a process I'm still working on, to work from financial stability to solvency and then security. As people move into security, they need to learn more about investments, how to invest, because once you have that extra money in savings, compound interest is, I think it was Einstein, wasn't it, Jim, that said that compound interest is is one of the wonders of the world, how it works. And so we need to invest our money so that it's got more leverage, that it's doing more for us. Now, you'll need to seek some experienced advisors along the way in accounting, legal, business, and investment to help you reach your goals. You don't need to become a financial planner, a lawyer, or an accountant, but you do need to be educated to ask the right questions, to be able to review reports, and to ensure your team is working on your behalf. I just want to encourage our listeners to go beyond their present situation, to work tangibly to create financial stability, solvency, and security. For them to think about a new sense of financial security and how it would allow them to give more money away, to work for free, to treat people for free if they wanted to travel, take more workshops, to take care of their health, to cultivate deep, rich relationships. Imagine, for our listeners out there, imagine how this what this kind of financial freedom would do for you. I'm going to throw in another quote, Jim. Your economic security does not lie in your job. It lies in your own power to produce, to think, to learn, to create, to adapt. That's true financial independence. That was from Stephen Covey.
One of my favorite authors. Very difficult man to read, but definitely one of my favorite authors.
Yeah.
Now, I'd just like to remind our listeners that if they have a question they'd like to submit, just go to the broadcast page and just submit it in the Q&A section on the bottom left-hand side. We have a number of questions outstanding, and we'll go to those in a minute. Don, I think I agree with you wholeheartedly that we do need a team to do all this stuff. So everyone should look at getting a team working for them. So do you have any final thoughts before we go to the audience and their questions?
No, I'm ready. If you have a couple questions, I'm ready to field some questions.
Okay. We have a question from Natalia Manchester, who's representing a class in Brantford Hall Career Institute in Windsor, Connecticut.
Okay.
And the class is currently listening. The class sent her to computer to ask the question, how important is marketing for gaining clientele?
Well, that's almost a given, isn't it? I mean, in a profession, doctors don't have to market. I mean, there's a shortage of them, and there's a fully funded Medicare program behind them. So doctors don't really need to market themselves. Where we're in the paramedical funding model, so marketing is essential for us to be able to attract people in, to educate them, an ongoing source of treating individuals. We have some advantages here in Ontario and some of the other provinces and states where there are regulations in place, and the workers' compensation or the auto insurance or the extended health care plans, they recognize the practitioners. So it's a bit easier. A lot of practitioners out there that are not regulated, it's much tougher because people are paying out of pocket. But marketing is certainly an essential component of bringing in more business. And I'll just refer listeners to our second program in the series where we had Eric Brown on talking about marketing. I think that would be a good program to go back and listen to.
We also have a question from Chris in Syracuse. And that question is, what is the best way to set up for retirement on a small salary with no startup money?
Well, I think the process we talked about tonight is really set the framework. In terms of financial stability, that is the first goal. So therapists out there who aren't financially stable at this point, there's some decisions to be made. There's some questions you need to ask yourself. For example, if you're working in a clinic where most of your money is going to your operating expenses, then you might want to look at working at either cutting back to part-time hours, finding a way to reduce your rent, maybe working from home, or take on some modalities like TENS or ultrasound. Find ways so you can treat more people in a day that's less physically demanding. So it's really important to get to that step of financial stability. And then once you do there, you need to look at all your debts. You need to list them all, credit cards, line of credit, student loans, anything that is outstanding, and work at paying those off systematically. No worries. I mean, it could take you years to do it, but it's an essential next step. Once you pay off that debt, then you start investing in your retirement. It really doesn't make sense to start investing in retirement until you pay off debt, because some credit card companies are charging like 18-19% interest, And on your investment, by the time you take off the management fee, most people are only making 4 to 8% on their investment. So the best return on your investment is to first get financially stable where you have extra money to play with, pay off all your debt, and then start building up money for investments.
Okay, Don, we're getting very close to the end of our program, and I think that you are giving out a prize tonight, and I'm going to give people a skill testing question. So what prize are you offering the people?
Well, we're going to offer another copy of Better Business Agreements.
Well, that sounds like a great prize. I've read that book.
Yeah.
It's an excellent book.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
You actually did a review for us on the book, and I really appreciated that.
Oh, that was a long time ago, yes. I'd almost forgotten.
Yeah.
It was an excellent book, though, and certainly enjoyed reading it. So my question to the audience, and you can just submit your answers to the Q&A box on the broadcast page, is what are the fifth and sixth words in the main heading on the broadcast page? And the person who gets that answer correct, please give us your email address and or phone number with your response, and we will announce the winner, if not at the end of the program, then on the next broadcast. Now, I'm going to put out one more question to you, Don, before I wrap up with some announcements.
Yeah.
And we seems we have a number of American listeners this evening. And Heidi from Springfield, Virginia, is taking out a small amount of debt to further her education, such as seminars and complementary therapies, in order to increase the income. Is it a wise decision?
Jim, give me the second half of that question again.
Is taking out a small amount of debt to further the education in order to increase her income in the long run a wise decision?
Thank you. I'll say that yes, I think it's a very important idea to invest in yourself. Although you're taking some debt up front initially, it's a good kind of debt because you're going to get a return on that investment. It's just like buying a property that'll turn around and appreciate, or like when you paid to go to massage school and it raised your ability to earn more income. Now, I'll give a couple of points around this. I would suggest if you're investing in seminars or professional development for yourself, make sure you do a really good job around marketing this. So when you're right now with your existing clientele or patient base, make sure everybody knows you're going to a workshop. Submit a newsletter or put signage up in your office. Make sure everybody knows you're going. Let them know which weekend you're going to be away. Let them know what kind of conditions that the new skills that you have will be able to treat. And then when you get back, something that I've often done with a new technique is I'll invite a few people, existing patients, in just for a complimentary treatment. Say, I've got this new skill I'm really excited about, and I want you to come in and just try it and give me some feedback. Now, what that does is it makes them aware of this new skill you have. It shows them that you're investing in their health because you're constantly upgrading yourself. And they say, wow, that worked. I'm going to come back for that treatment again, or I'm going to refer other people for that treatment who could benefit as well. So I would say be really choosy about what you do. If it's completely different, so for example, if you're in a clinical type of practice and you want to take a Reiki workshop, well, it might not be suitable to the audience that you're currently working with. Just like someone who is working in a spa might take a sports injury workshop. It's not really applicable to their workspace. So unless you're planning on making a change, make sure that when you invest in a seminar, you're going to get a return on investment because you're going to be educating people, you're going to be introducing them to this new technique, you're going to be thinking of ways of how can I use this technique to treat more people. Maybe you're going to raise your fees, or maybe the technique's going to allow you to treat more people in a day. You should always get some kind of return on investment when you go to a seminar. Don't take a seminar just for the sake of taking it. Make sure that it's actually going to pay you back. It's going to give you something back.
Excellent comment, Don. Excellent comment. I've invested many times in my education, and it's paid off threefold, probably tenfold.
Yes, I know. You've taken many workshops, Jim. You're well educated and have taken a lot of postgraduate work above and beyond your massage training.
And it has paid off, very much so,
yeah.
Very much so. And now I'd like to make a few announcements before we announce the winner of tonight's door prize. I'd like you to join the MT Coach community. So just send us your feedback. If you send us your email address, we can be in contact with you on a regular basis. And I'd like to remind you to tune in next week and to visit the MT Coach site for any of the replays that you'd like to hear. And now our draw prize winner is Kat Krug from Cleveland, Ohio. The fifth and sixth words on the main heading were financial stability, which is the whole crux of Don's talk tonight. And so at this point in time, Don, I'd like to thank you very much for speaking to our listeners
and for speaking with me. Before we go, Jim, we're going
to
need Kat's, if Kat could email us her...
I've got her email address right here.
Oh, you have it? Okay.
I have it, I will write it down. And
great.
We can go from there.
Perfect.
She's
thanks,
at corporateoasis@yahoo.com.
Okay.
Okay. So, Don, thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. And have a good night.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Don.